One of the arguments over the future of home computing is, will we add computing power to our television sets, or will we add TV capability to our personal computers? Apple is betting that the TV will be the preferred viewing device with a new approach to home computing called Pippin.
Okay, here we go. Hello, and welcome to the Coldcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, you're like, I'm enunciating like I never have
Elijah.
Before. I want people to understand what I'm saying this time. Joining me today, he's discovered that a tall, sparkling ale and a cheerful hello, governor, can solve most of life's problems. Leander Caney is here.
Hey, I found it so true.
It's British wisdom right there. Also with us, sick and tired of all the cat calls, ladies. Yes, he knows he's got a cute tush. You don't need to keep reminding him. Buster Kine is here.
Hey,
that thing's good, man.
Oh, thanks.
It's like a perfect square. Well, it's slow. It's a slow time of year, isn't it? It feels like the products come out only like twice a year now. And in between, we just got to jam in as much filler as we possibly can. Doesn't it feel like they used to come out more often?
Well, yeah. Was there anything in January, February time frame?
No.
Oh, Macworld. There used to be Macworld.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah,
okay,
of course.
That's,
yeah, yeah,
maybe
yeah.
That's why it feels
about?
Like there's something missing. I was like, there's
yeah,
nothing.
This was this is usually the busy time of year, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is going to be a busy year for Apple for sure, isn't it? Because they're going to be moving into their headquarters too, aren't they?
Are they moving into those offices this year?
I think so, yeah. I think it's on tap.
Man,
not
that's
sure when,
gonna be
though.
Cool.
They said when, Buster?
What?
Have they said when?
I think they just said first half of 2017. It's almost
first
done
half,
on the campus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we drove by the other day when it was at in the early evening, and it was all lit up, and my God, it looked amazing. It
oh, so they got the lights on. They're working on the interior now.
There's some really big holes in there, you know, that you can see. I'm guessing it's the cafeteria or something. Maybe it's Tim Cook's office. like a really big open space at one side.
Uh-huh.
Inside. But it looks really spectacular. You don't see that in the drone videos. I'm going to go back with my son and get some pictures.
The drone videos only show you the top. That's the thing about the drone videos. You know, it's like, it looks cool, but it just shows you the overall construction on the outside. And once they're finished with that, you're not going to be able to see Jack. Once they start working on the interior offices and all that kind of stuff, and Johnny Ive's domicile, you know, his huge open white space with only one desk. It's going to be like an airplane hangar, and there's going to be one white desk in the middle.
I think the design studios are actually a separate building on the same campus, but a completely separate complex.
In another donut shape building?
No, it's actually a regular shaped building.
What? I would be getting kind of gypped if I were on the industrial design team and they're building these amazing new offices and like you're going to be pushed off to like next to like the physical workout area.
It's like, yeah, but they're not going to be stuck in some shed at the back. These are going to be as lavish as the spaceship itself. And you know, there was talk about big testing spaces, wind tunnels, driving tracks. Have you seen those pictures of the McLaren headquarters? Yeah, right, exactly. There's going to be all kinds of crazy stuff in there. All these kind of crazy machines, this prototyping stuff.
We should make a mecha out there, Buster, when it's done. Do you think they're going to give tours,
sure.
Leander?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah, probably, yeah. They'll let you, you know, eat lunch with Tim and.
You think so?
Of course, yeah. Hang out,
oh,
you know,
man.
Go to a couple of boardroom meetings. Check out the check out the secret design lab. Yeah.
There's like I can imagine like the camera angle. It's like you can see like Tim Cook making his comments, and then there's Johnny Ive, and then it pans to us, and we're just sitting there nodding. We're like, we think it needs more chamfered edges, and their eyes get wide. And they're like, my God, he's right. That would be super cool to go down there and just kind of hang out and try to sneak in there. You know, the security down there has just got to be like House.
It's going to be like, it's going to be like some Bond lair, isn't it? You know, you'll be trying to sprint across the lawn. You'll see an open door. You'll be trying to Hollywood in, and then suddenly the ground will open up. It'll be like stakes.
It's going to be like, have you seen the movie Aeon Flux when they're trying to get into that, like that super futuristic, like fortress? You guys know what I'm talking about?
I think so. Isn't that with Mila, what's her face?
It's Charlize Theron. And, okay. I think she's the only actual famous person in it, but, it's actually not a bad movie. Okay. Well, we are going to be talking about the news here in just a sec. And if you stick around, we're going to be doing something that I've wanted to do for a while. And it's going to be fun. We're going to be talking about the weirdest and wackiest and strangest discontinued products from Apple's past. We've all got some picks. We got some weird ones for you. And, you know, it's funny. I was researching this. And you look at how polished Apple is today and the products they have and how cool they all are. But back in the day, they were not nearly as polished as they are now. And they were much more, in my opinion, like a Windows company, just kind of throwing stuff at the wall. And they released some crazy ass stuff that kind of makes you scratch your head and wonder how they made it. In fact, I think bringing Steve Jobs back in is what saved their company in several instances, just because they were kind of going off in these directions that were totally crazy. And it seemed like they were going to go out of business because the products they were selling.
That really bucks the conventional wisdom.
Yeah, I know, right? Totally yeah. New and novel.
That's
thought.
Mind-blowing. I've never really thought about that before.
Yeah, well, that's why people come here, Lander. They get award-winning analysis. That's probably why all these news organizations keep contacting me and asking me to bring my analysis to their news stations. I'm like, I'm busy. I've got the Cult Cast. That's where you can catch me every Thursday night. Every Thursday night. Okay, before we hop into it, let's go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Do you need a new website? It's a brand new year. Maybe you are planning to make your next move this year. You're going to start a business. You want to put your artwork online. You want to put your photography online. You want to create a web presence for your brand online. Squarespace makes it easy to make your next move. You can get your website up and running quickly. And you will have a beautiful website up and running because you can use their template system. They have all these beautiful templates that you can choose from, a whole variety of templates. And you can drag and drop all these different elements into the templates, move things around, customize it so it looks uniquely yours. And then with a single click of a button, your website will be published. It will be online. You can build an e-commerce store if you want and start selling products. All of this great functionality is included in Squarespace's platform. You don't need to go anywhere else. And it's super easy to use. You can bring in contributors to help you do stuff so you can manage your website without having to pay a developer to help you out with this stuff. That's why I always tell people, if you need a website, check out Squarespace. And if you get stuck when you're configuring things, you can contact their 24/7 customer service to help you out. Squarespace is fantastic. I pay for Squarespace every single month, just like everybody else, because I use it and I love it. You can get signed up at squarespace.com. You have a 2-week free trial to build whatever you want and play around with stuff, dig into it, see how you like it. And if you decide you want to continue your service, you can sign up for a month of service or a year of service. And whatever you sign up for, you can use code CULTCAST at checkout. That's CULTCAST at checkout. And you will save 10% off your first order. Squarespace.com. Go check it. Oot. Is that how Canadians say out? Isn't it oot?
It's cool. Oot.
Maybe I don't think they actually say oots. I don't think anyone
that's
says
Scottish.
That might be Scottish, yeah.
Yeah.
Check it out. That's how the Scottish do the Squarespace. It's get out there and check it out. Do you have a pretty solid Scottish accent, Leander?
Well, more solid than that, for sure.
Well, yeah. Dude, that was like a solid 8 out of 10. Come on, be honest.
Hey,
go check it out.
It's all over the place. It sounds Australian.
It sounds like Australian. Is that what you said?
Well, not even that. It's a weird Australian-Scottish hybrid.
Australian-Scottish hybrid. I feel like when I was younger, I used to be a lot better at accents than I am now. And now all my accents, they start off pretty solid, and then they just get to be like some weird hybrid, like halfway through my sentence.
Yeah, you're getting old, Burfon.
At least I tried. Do you guys have any solid British accents?
Or any British? Solid accents? I can do a British accent, yeah. I've been doing it for years. I'm actually from the South.
Any other accents, Leander, that you got on tap for us?
I don't know. You're Scottish, just gonna make fun I guess. Of mine.
Huh? Can you do an American accent, Leander?
Yeah, what about an American
accent?
No, it's
terrible. I can't do accents. I'm terrible.
Okay.
Or impressions. Or tell jokes.
Oh, your jokes are pretty solid. I mean, 6 out of 10 is definitely not bad.
I mean, like, you know, prepared jokes. We have to remember a punchline.
Oh. You know, I heard that only a very small percentage of the population, like 2 or 3% of people, can actually remember a joke and tell it.
What?
Is yeah, that low? I heard that it's very low? Rare.
That low?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where I got that fact from. I don't even know if it is a fact. But
it's an
you know, I mean,
fact.
Yeah, think about right. how many jokes you've heard in your life. Can you remember any of them and tell them in any kind of convincing way? Yeah.
I can only remember one.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, no, I'm going to mess it up, though, in public. Okay, well. I'm not concentrating furiously.
Okay, what is it?
So this guy's walking into the woods with this clown.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns to the clown and he says, "Man, it's awfully dark around here. It's really scary." And he says, "Yeah, right. Think what it's going to be like when I have to walk out here alone." See?
What? Do you get it, Buster?
No, I didn't get it.
I don't get it either. Who was talking? Was it the clown or the guy?
No, so the guy. I told you to screw it up. The guy turns to the clown and says, "Isn't it really scary?" And the clown says, "Yeah, think how scary it's going to be when I have to walk out of here alone."
Oh, okay.
See? I just can't tell a joke. I tried to tell that at a party the other night with like a bunch of people, and they all just like looked at me. It was like humiliating, mortifying.
And telling jokes at a party, that's tough. That's tough. When you're in front of a big group of people like that and they're all like waiting on the punchline. Because you know what they say about telling a good joke. It's all about...
the delivery.
Timing.
You know what helps too is laughing at your own joke. Well, which I never do.
You don't laugh at your own joke?
Well, you gotta. I would have been funny if I started laughing, right? Well, if I hadn't bungled it, but then also if I'd started laughing, that would have been funny because and then it becomes infectious, you know, like everyone.
And
else
then they're just laughing because you're laughing,
right?
I think that's probably why I laugh at most of your jokes is because I feel like you're about to laugh at your own jokes, so I start laughing too. But oftentimes I'm the only one laughing at my jokes.
Yeah, but you see, but that helps, like, because then everyone else starts laughing.
It does help. Yeah, it kind of it tricks people, right? Thinking like, oh man, it's like a laugh track on a television show.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
they're like, oh, everyone's laughing. I guess I should be laughing too. You're right. It's totally infectious. Because if I didn't laugh when I told my jokes, I'd say like 95%, maybe higher, maybe 98% of them would just totally fall flat. I mean, I laugh at my own jokes, and as is, I'd say probably 75% of them totally fall down. But if I laugh, people are like, oh man, that one actually isn't too bad. He's laughing.
That sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah. Right on the money. That might be conservative, actually. All right. Let's run through some Apple news. I mean, this is an Apple show, right? So let me get my notes out here. What are we going to start with? Right. Okay. Got some rumors for you guys. For, well, hopefully iPhone 8. We'll see how this pans out. But to Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, the only Apple analyst that ever gets anything right these days, Gene Munster, he's having a rough couple years. Ming-Chi Kuo is saying that Apple is developing new biometric sensors to replace the existing Touch ID on your current iPhone, and it will likely be in the form of face recognition. We've talked about this for the iPhone 8. He believes that Apple is working on facial recognition for authentication and unlocking, and it will eventually eliminate the Touch ID entirely. The new technology will allow Apple to move to a zero bevel device, so, you know, like take away the home button and extend the screen. Currently rumored to land on the iPhone 8, but Ming-Chi Kuo says the optical sensor is still in early development stages, and he can't confirm when it's actually going to arrive, so the timeline for this stuff is kind of open-ended. Leander, I'm going to go to you with this. Do you think we're going to get an iPhone 8 with no home button? Is this going to be the year that Apple just goes to a giant glass screen? You can guess if you want. It's anybody's guess, right? If Ming-Chi Kuo doesn't know, I guarantee you don't know.
Some of the Samsung handsets using facial recognition? Didn't one of the recent, or is it just in pans? Because I don't know if
it's
anyone's
The S8 is supposed to have it.
Okay, so, you know, like, nothing on the market right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't know. Like, I haven't seen anything, you know, anyone else using them. Apple's never, you know, like, not always the first earliest adopter of this stuff. And, you know what? No, someone does have one. It's ringing a bell now. But I'm not sure it worked very well. In fact, it came out 2 or 3 years ago. one of the phone manufacturers.
One of the Motorola ones?
I'm wondering, yeah. Or maybe one of the Lumas or someone has tried this. And you know, it's sunk without a trace. Mm-hmm. We'd have to do some research to remember who it was. But, you know, I'd say it was early days yet for that kind of thing.
I think it still is.
And, you know, the Touch ID is just becoming sort of mature, you know, and becoming really reliable and really good.
I mean, it's flawless now. Remember when it first came out, how many problems we all had with it?
Yeah.
And Landy, especially you, because you said your fingertips are like dried up old prunes.
Right.
And it would never unlock to keep for redoing you, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was perfect. I mean, for me anyway, it's not perfect, but it's definitely much better.
I rarely have problems with my Touch ID anymore. Buster, do you ever have where it tells you you have to enter your code in?
Not that often, yeah.
Yeah, for me either. So I would wonder how it would work for facial recognition when you're in the dark. You know, one of the things I like about Touch ID is you just touch your finger. You don't have to be looking at the phone, and it unlocks it. And if you were not to have that, I wonder how you would have to hold the phone in position to your face. And that seems like it might be inconvenient. And then also
you have to press your face against the glass, just like you do with the Touch ID.
It's like when you're on an overpacked subway and your face is like smashed against the glass in the
right.
door.
Yeah,
that's what you have to do to make it work. It's going to be great watching Tim Cook demo that on stage. So in any case,
it must have infrared or something, right? It must shine a light at your face, probably infrared.
Maybe, yeah, it might be infrared. It might create like a depth map like the current iPhone 7 Plus camera, you know, can do to create that that blurred background effect or something. Let's talk about this really quickly. Apple hired a new person. This guy's name is Greg Duffy. I don't know much about him, but he was the former CEO of Dropcam, which was this company that made these IP cameras that connect to your Wi-Fi in your house, and then you can, like, you know, just like connect to them and view what's going on in your house. And now these IP cameras are available everywhere. I mean, they've really become somewhat ubiquitous in the last, I'd say, year or two. And Google bought Dropcam, the company, and this guy left Google, and now he's at Apple. And I just kind of wonder, what would Apple be using this guy for? I was thinking maybe like Apple's going to get into the, I don't know if it's going to be home security markets or if they're building their own Echo type device that's going to have cameras in it or something.
That's what made me think of.
Like you think that they might be building like cameras into like an Echo type device?
Yeah, with you know, AR stuff in it too. So it recognizes you when you come home and recognizes what's going on in the house. It can see what's going on. You know, like Nest at the moment, it has that sort of, you know, when you're home feature, when you're away, to turn the heating down. But this would be like that on steroids and have, you know, sort of AI intelligence.
I mean, I think Apple's got to be working on something to compete with the Echo. Don't you think, Leander? I mean, because these devices are becoming so popular now.
I think more in the sense that the Echo showed that it makes sense, that the voice interface is great for the home.
The Echo, again, man, the voice recognition on the Echo is unbelievably good. If you've never used one before, you can say Echo's name. I call mine the Echo. You can also call it Alexa, and I think it comes pre-programmed as Alexa, so you can say Alexa to activate it. But you could say its name from across the room quietly, even with other speech happening in the room, and it almost always locks onto your voice. And you can ask it very specific questions about things that you're trying to figure out. Like, I think the other day I was trying to figure out how old Melania Trump was. Don't ask me why. So I asked it how old Melania Trump was, and I think she's like 46 or something. And much younger than Donald. And maybe that's why I was trying to figure out how old she was. I wanted to know like how much younger she was than him or something. But it knew, right? And you can ask it questions like that, and it almost always gets the answers right. So it'd be cool to see Apple come up with a device like that. That worked in the house.
Well, Buster, what did you think? Why do you think this Dropcam guy is that? What might he be doing at Apple?
I don't know. I saw some article that said he's a pretty interesting guy. Like after he left Google, he got his helicopter's pilot's license and also learned how to fly fighter jets and was just doing all kinds of crazy like airplane trips and plotting to start startup. Yeah, that is weird. Or just a super rich guy because he.
I was going to say, you get to be that rich. You're like, why not learn how to fly a fighter jet?
Well, you know, Larry Page has got those two startups, like making a giant drone for
flying cars. Yeah.
So maybe Apple's getting into that. Maybe the Apple car's a flying car.
Or I just think he probably has to have been brought back. It has to be something cool, I think, in order to brought him over, is what I've read from another article, because he had some other stuff that he was interested in doing. So I don't know. It seems like an Alexa speaker or a Siri speaker, it seems like, I don't know. I don't think that sounds that cool, though. I wouldn't be that excited about it. But maybe they can do something that Amazon hasn't done yet.
I like where you're going with this. You're right, because when you have that much money, I mean, what's another $50 million, right? Or $20 million.
Yeah.
At that point, if you have a ton of money, you probably would be looking for something that was going to really be interesting to you and challenge you to do something creative.
Yeah.
Right. And Apple's got giant, you know, huge resources. And if you're successful, it'll bring it to the market and it will more than likely make it successful. You know, it's going to be really, really tempting for someone to be given, if they had a pet project, if they had something to develop. You know, I mean, what better place could do it, like somewhere like Apple? If you do it as a startup, you have all the risks, don't you, of you know, like getting everything right, all the sales and the marketing strategy. Apple already has that all in place, so you can concentrate on the, you know, the sort of tech side of things.
Yeah, and you have Uncle Scrooge's money vault,
right.
Unlimited money vault that you can go swimming in,
right.
You know, whatever you need.
Exactly.
Whatever you're
running
low on
funds.
Pick up
a few buckets of wheelbarrows of coins, you know, I need this for that. You know, they would have all the resources you could possibly want.
And the best machinery and probably some of the best minds in all these different fields. I mean, just think of like the brain resources that Apple has.
Right.
There's probably nothing like it on Earth.
That, you know, like Dropcam was the first sort of really consumer friendly IP camera, wasn't it? So, you know, what he brought to it was that sense, that sort of Apple X sense of the user interface, making it easy. And, you know, look at, despite HomeKit and Google Home and all these other products, the home automation stuff being on the market for a couple of years, really seriously now, and the HomeKit platform, you know, it still hasn't taken off. It's still a stinking horrible mess, really fractured, really difficult to get everything to work together, difficult to get it to do anything, you know, like really useful or interesting. I think there's still a ton of opportunity there to have a really clever, really well-built, you know, home interface, probably something like Alexa that would take care of a lot of the sort of home automation and home tasks. Mm-hmm. Everything from watching TV to controlling your lights, you know, and I think also integrating with Apple's sort of ecosystem, you know, doing a family calendar, knowing where people are, you know, find my friends, like where are the kids, and it could use that to find out, you know, if they're on their way home or not. You know, I think there's a whole bunch of interesting things they might be able to do.
We've talked about this before. It would be cool to be like control the other devices in your house on your behalf. Like that kind of stuff would be super
right.
cool. Or you said, like, where are my kids? And it could like bring up a map on your phone and show you exactly where they are.
No, well, just answer it, you know, by speaker. Because I think the whole Star Trek, you know, like the interaction with the Star Trek computer, I think it's perfect. Perfect for the home. Perfect for the, you know, for the sort of automated, you know, AI-driven, you know, voice-activated, you know, computers of the future. Because you don't want to look at you don't want to look at your screen. You don't want to get your phone out of your pocket. You know, you just want to you want to be able to talk to this thing. How old's Melania? You know, that scenario.
The important information that you need right away. Speaking of Star Trek, so I was reading this week that with the Alexa or with the Echo, you can now change its name to computer. So you can be like computer, and it will activate, so you can speak to it.
So when you're walking around the house with your Star Trek pajamas on,
yeah.
As a huge Star Trek fan, I was really excited to see that. I need to see if I can change mine as well, because it just reminds me of Star Trek: The Next Generation. It's one of the best shows ever made, and they're always like talking to the computer and having it do stuff for them. So if you're wondering, I am going to shave my head and wear a Star Trek outfit, and you guys will have to start dressing me as Jean-Luc Picard. Dream of mine. Okay, let's talk about some of these betas, Buster, before we move into the weird and wacky Apple forgotten products. So we got some new betas this week. We got iOS 10.3, which, if I understand correctly, didn't really have a whole lot of juicy stuff, but it did have one cool feature, right?
Find my AirPods.
Which you don't even have AirPods. You can't even find them yet.
Yeah, so whatever. Don't care
about
that. But
I got AirPods, so does Leander. Have you tried this out, Leander?
Yeah, I tried it out yesterday.
How did it work?
Well, it's semi-useful, kind of. You know, they're so small that when you make it beep, it's like, oh, what's that faint beeping sound? You know, you almost have to be sort of like sitting right on top of them to be able to hear it.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a really quiet room and, you know, you might be able to hear it across the room or something like that. But I doubt you'd be able to hear it in another room. It only works when they're outside of the case.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a weird thing.
Right, yeah, that's a bit of a shame because, like, you know, more often than not, it's you put them back in the case when you're done when you're done with them.
Right.
But, you know, the useful thing, I think, is, you know, last location. So if you're really clueless and you can call up on a map and you can say, oh, look, and you can look at the different, you know, like maybe you left it in a restaurant or you left it at work or the gym, you know, you better see where it would narrow it down using the last location where they were. That's useful.
That is useful. And then, so as Lander said, if you have the AirPods inside the case, you can't make them beep. They have to be outside the AirPods in order for that functionality to work. But I guess it's more useful to find like one AirPod if maybe you lost it in your couch or something.
Right.
But so you tried out the beeping and it wasn't very loud. I was curious about like the volume of it.
Yeah, I don't think it was very loud. And I tried turning it up and you know, it wasn't that loud.
Oh, so yeah, I guess kind of a semi-useful feature then. It's only going to be good in a limited amount of scenarios. But if you do lose your AirPods entirely, as you said, at least you can see on a map where they were last used. So that will at least kind of help you get an idea of where you left them and where somebody else undoubtedly took them and kept them for their own. Because right. If you leave these anywhere, they're absolutely getting stolen. I mean, you still cannot find these anywhere. The last we spoke about these, I think it was a couple weeks ago, and I had told people to find or to use AirPods.isinstock.com, and this website, you put in your email address and then it will ping you when your local Apple store has AirPods in stock, so you can go online, buy them, and then go pick them up. Since we've talked about them, my Apple store has not gotten a single delivery of them. So these things are still incredibly constrained. You can't get them anywhere. I don't know why Apple's having such terrible stock issues with these. Well, I can't imagine that they're still in that high a demand.
Yeah, it must be.
They must be, I guess. I mean, because they were upping production, right? Last I heard.
They're hot.
So, man, it's crazy. But I'm glad I got mine when I did because I love them. I love them. Okay, let's talk about macOS 10.12.4, the beta. Not a whole lot in this one either, right, Buster? It's just basically night shift mode.
Night shift and cricket scores in Siri.
Oh, really? Leander, finally.
Jolly good, yeah. Cricket. Can't wait to find England's lost again.
Is cricket a pretty big sport in England?
Oh, yeah, huge.
People all love
across,
it, huh?
Yeah, all across the former, you know, colonies, too.
but
even
not,
the Indians are even crazier about cricket, you know, and the West Indians, too.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, yeah. It's a huge game.
It's not as big as football, though, right?
Soccer?
Yeah.
Nearly as big.
You're kidding.
No, not at all. It's like baseball. It would be like baseball to football here.
Wow. I had no idea it was big.
It's massive.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So do they fill up stadiums with people? And
Oh, yeah. And they're dancing in the aisles. It's crazy. Yeah. It's a huge party.
World Cup.
I don't
want to
offend anyone, but cricket is such a weird sport. Like that.
Oh, my
paddle.
God. Are you joking? Baseball?
I think baseball, it's not one of my favorite sports either.
Baseball is pretty lame.
I'm not a sports guy. I should preface this. I'm not a really big sports guy. But like cricket, like the bat is just, it's not really a manly bat, man. It's a paddle. It's like the same
Come
thing.
Come on,
that,
and of course it is. You have been hit with a cricket bat? Walking Dead was in England.
But after criticizing it,
have you seen Shaun of the Dead? It was totally effective against zombies.
I hadn't considered that. Yeah, you're right. It's a great zombie weapon. Was that a cricket bat? I didn't even know
that. Yeah, that was a cricket bat.
Oh, man, he destroyed those zombies with that.
Oh, yeah, it's heavier than a baseball bat. So I would say it was probably more effective than a baseball bat.
I guess any sport you're not familiar with looks weird because you can look at other sports too.
It's like baseball. Really, it's like, you know, hours and hours of tedium. And then suddenly, you know, someone does something. They hit it and they hit the ball and then it goes bonkers for a few minutes of like amazing action. In fact I'll try and dig it up. There was a gif going around just a couple of weeks ago of this amazing this guy got someone out. He threw the ball at his wickets. and it was really astonishing piece of athleticism, like this amazing, he caught the ball and then turned around and chucked it, and got this guy out, like right on the line. And it really is an amazing, it's like those ones where you see, like, you know, Maradona kick an overhead kick, a goal, you know, and it's an astonishing piece of athleticism. I'll try and dig it up so you can stick it in the show notes.
Yeah, you got to send me an exciting piece of cricket footage because I don't think I've definitely never seen one.
It might take me a few hours to dig it up, but yeah, I'll try.
It's a good use of your time today, though. I'm with you on baseball. Baseball has always been boring to me. I think baseball is one of those interesting sports. Because when you watch, it's probably fun to be at the game and be in the atmosphere of baseball. But when you watch it on TV, it's like watching golf, man. It's so boring.
Well, someone said that watching baseball is like watching the surface of a pond. You know, it's very still, but you know, you've got to know a lot about baseball and what's going on to really appreciate it, don't you? Like, I learned it because my son played baseball for years, and so at first I was like that. I used to love going. Actually, you know, I take that back. I love watching him and the kids play baseball, even though it was even worse with them. You know, because they would, like, you know, it was
because they were terrible.
But, you know, like, once I'd learned what was going on, the rules and the different strategies and loading the bases, you know, that kind of stuff. Once you know more about it, it's better because you can see what's at stake. And I think that's a lot of what baseball's like. You know, they're looking at it and you know, every baseball fan knows all the stats for decades, right? For every player, every team, the last time they met, how many runs they got, you know, how many pitches and strikes and scores and whatever, you know, everyone's got. So they've got all this, it's like this roiling ball of knowledge, you know, that they bring to, they're sitting there, nothing's happening. And yet these guys' brains are going like crazy because they can see all the angles, yeah?
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what it's like? And they're jotting it down. I mean, I used to go baseball with a couple of workmates and you know, the minute we got down there, they'd pull out these pads and they'd be jotting down statistics and looking stuff up. And it was crazy. I mean, the amount of knowledge they had was absurd.
And you're just like sitting there totally bored as they're writing out all these statistics.
Oh my God, yeah. I was like, let's go get some beers.
You're like, why are all these 40-year-old guys just sitting down there swinging the bat? And it's a weird sport because a lot of the guys that play it are older too. It's one of the only sports where it's like a bunch of old, overweight guys.
Yeah.
The guys that are good. I'm just totally revealing my ignorance here. We probably have some baseball fans listening. Not very many, though, let's be honest. There's not very many people that like baseball these days, right? Oh, Night Shift. Sorry, we totally got off track there. I wanted to mention Night Shift, one of my favorite features that Apple has ever added into their software. Ever since they've added Night Shift to iOS, I've activated it so it turns on, you know, before I go to sleep because I use my iPad to to read, well, basically just to browse Reddit at night before I go to bed. And it used to keep me up for hours because that blue light really does affect me a lot. And so I would just stay awake till 1-2 in the morning just reading, and I wouldn't be tired. And now that I have Night Shift activated, I can read, but I still get tired, and I can you know, read my iPad at night and still go to bed at a reasonable hour. Have you guys noticed anything like that, like when you activate Night Shift, like it actually works well for you?
Yeah, I use it, and I think it helps, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Maybe you guys don't read at night like I do. As often
no, I do. I do exactly the same thing.
Oh, do you read your iPad before you go to bed?
I've got a new strategy, though. I don't know if I should talk about it for getting to sleep, and I'm wired up.
Oh, yeah, you just gargle with NyQuil, right? And then you
I moved on for the NyQuil, a bit too chemical for me.
Oh, really? Now it's just straight whiskey, just a few gulps of that.
No, I got a vaporizer with a certain
okay, right.
And it works great, you know. A few hits off of that, and then
puffs on the magic dragon,
and it puts me out, and I sleep like a log. It's great.
Nice.
Well, there's a strategy I haven't heard. I would have thought that would have kept you awake.
Well, no, because you got to get the special. You get the special blend.
Oh, there's a kind that helps you fall asleep.
Low THC, high cannabinoids. So
really,
it doesn't make you high. It just knocks you out.
Oh, interesting. It's so amazing, it actually is like a medicinal type of...
It really is, yeah.
I didn't even know they made such a thing.
Oh my God, there's all sorts of stuff. Yeah, no, it's genuinely medicinal. It's really sophisticated here.
And yeah, I bet in San Francisco you guys have stuff not available anywhere else in the world. Maybe Amsterdam, I think. But okay, let's mention one last thing and let's go into our Apple products conversation. So... I at least wanted to bring this up as a rumor because I thought this was cool. I hope this ends up coming to fruition. There is a rumor that I should mention was kind of a shaky rumor. It comes from a site called The Verifier, which doesn't really have a track record of Apple rumors, but they claim that they have information from people familiar with the next version of iOS, iOS 11, that it's going to include FaceTime group calls. So you'll be able to have a FaceTime video call with up to 5 participants. I wonder, yeah, that must include yourself, so you and 4 other people. And you can also do group message chats on the video call and that type of thing.
Hmm. You know, we should think about using that for the the podcast.
I was just thinking the same thing. Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. As soon as I heard this, that was the first thing that I thought of. I mean, to all our listeners, you guys would not believe the amount of technical problems we have almost every show. I mean, if we go one show without technical problems, I am just like elated. Because we constantly have audio issues, we have disconnection issues, we have internet issues. It's like never ending. Every single show, and somehow it always seems to be on Leander's side.
I would have said.
Actually, you've been pretty good for a while. We've been having problems with Buster's connection and stuff. So, man, if Apple releases this, I would totally be willing to give this a shot. In fact, did we lose Leander?
I'm here. No.
Oh, you are. Okay. Sorry. I thought I saw a message that we lost you. Okay. Let's move on. To the last segment of the show. This is going to be Apple's weirdest and wackiest forgotten products. We got some good ones here for you. Oh, I almost forgot. Before we do that, I gotta say thank you to Blue Apron for supporting this episode. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. And if you go to blueapron.com, blueapron.com/cultcast, you can get your first 3 meals free. And there's absolutely no commitment. So you're going to get 3 free meals just for trying it out, blueapron.com. And it's free shipping as well. So, you know, no cost to you. Here's how it works. You go to blueapron.com/cultcast. You get signed up. And you can select from all these different menus and choose the kinds of foods that you like. Blue Apron has super high quality food. It's sustainably sourced. The produce is high quality. You choose your recipes, and then they send you the ingredients to your house so that you can cook them yourself. And so this is nice because if you don't have time to cook and you don't want to eat out, you know, because eating out is fun, but after a while, it kind of gets old, right? You just don't want to eat fast food anymore. You don't want to eat at restaurants anymore. You want to have some like wholesome, you know, home cooked meals. They send you all the ingredients and then you can sit around and cook these meals with your family and then, you know, sit around and enjoy these meals together. So it makes it really easy and convenient to cook food at home. And they have a bunch of delicious recipes. Some of the ones for January are spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage and fury cake. Oh, they put the phonetics in here this time. I think last week I called it fury kaki. So apparently that wasn't right. So they put the phonetic spelling in here. This is great. Yeah, thank you, Blue Apron. They had pork chops and garlic piccata with scallion rice and spinach. My mouth waters when I read these. Mushroom and chipotle pepper enchiladas with lime sour cream. They're constantly rotating through menus too, so you don't ever get the same thing. And if you head on over to blueapron.com/cultcast, you will get 3 free meals with free shipping. So there's no reason for you not to try it.
Huh.
I've got my first 3 free meals. I've got my my first set of meals on the way actually this next week, and I'm super excited to try them. And, you know, it's just an easy, convenient way to make dinner. And that way you don't have to get all the ingredients yourself. They send you everything you need with the recipe. All you do is cook it and you eat and you're good to go. blueapron.com/cultcast. Okay, here we go. This is what you've all been waiting for. This is the weirdest and wackiest Apple products from the years of yore. And like I said, when I was doing research on this, man, there are some crazy ass products that Apple has released in the last 30 years. I mean, you think of Apple as a super polished company now, but they weren't always like that. I mean, they had a lot of years wandering through the desert, so to speak. Leander, I'm sure you've got some good picks because you've been covering Apple forever, And you've been in the thick of it. So what was one of your picks?
One, I started making a list, you know, I came up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Oh, and that, gosh, doesn't even, dude.
That doesn't even include the obvious ones. Because if you do a search like, you know, worst Apple products or bad Apple products, it's always the same. You know, the Mighty Mouse, the G4 Cube.
Cube, yeah.
You know, the Hockey Puck Mouse.
Yeah.
You know, this the 20th anniversary Mac. So those lists are always exactly the same. So I was trying to choose ones that, that didn't make those lists.
I thought the 20th anniversary Mac was actually pretty cool. It looked like something like a sling blade. It was awesome, man.
Warzone's about six of those, I think. He used to have them all around his house.
I wonder if he used them. He probably did.
He definitely did, yeah. He loved those things. Some people love those things. They were totally like, it was the first, you know, like real... consumer computer, computer designed for the home rather than the office. Like, and up until that point, the only computers you could buy were all beige, and they were all like made for offices. So they were office computers, you know. And this one was the one, it combined a stereo with a computer. So it was kind of pretty forward thinking. You know, they bungled the marketing and the pricing on it. It was way overpriced, and it was marketed as a limited
edition. That's a common theme, man. A lot of these products are way overpriced.
Yeah, right.
You know what I loved about that 20th edition Mac, and actually this is true for a lot of the products that I saw that Apple designed, you know, in the 80s and 90s. They looked like they had a super cool aesthetic, and they looked like future. They looked like future editions of current products of that generation. So like in the 80s, like the 80s products looked like future iterations of 80s products. So it was very futuristic, but when you look at it now, you can totally tell that's from the 80s. But in the 80s, they thought that's what you would be using in the future, you know?
Right.
It's, well, like, you remember the first... like got the CRT, but it's like super like stylized around the CRT.
Well, it's funny about these science fiction movies that have CRTs in these days, you know, like Blade Runner and stuff like that. It's like, you know, right. that really gives it away, doesn't
even
it?
Even like Star Trek, and they're like on this spaceship, but like they're all looking at the CRT monitors and stuff. It's like, what?
Yeah, even it's got a feature into the interface.
They could not fathom how things would actually change.
Well, who can? Who can? Don't you remember the first iMac when it came out, the Bondi Blue? I mean, I thought that was really futuristic looking.
I'm trying to recall that one. Was that the eMac with the CRT in it?
No, just the first, you know, the first plastic iMac.
Oh,
the Bondi Blue one.
Yeah.
The green one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
greeny blue.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, out of your list of 25 products there, what's one of the top ones, you're like, why did this get made? Or here's a really strange one.
I would, you know, of the recent ones, you know, maybe the Apple, the gold Apple edition watch.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, that's right.
Because I can't imagine they sold, you know, more than a couple of those. I'm sure Melania's got one and Donald. But
Donald probably
doesn't because he's probably too thick to use a watch. But, you know, Ivanka probably has one. You know, I, you know, that was a real puzzle. Like, because I know when they announced it, you know, I did several stories. One about it being a Veblengood, which is to try and, it's a good that gets its. It was to try to elevate the whole line. You know what I mean? To try to make it seem more valuable. Mm-hmm. And then I sort of started wondering whether it was actually just sort of a marketing trick. You know, like a way to get celebrities to wear it, because that's in fact what happened, right? The only people who wore it were people like Beyonce and Drake, and they appeared in all those Instagram pictures. You know, posing with a gold Apple Watch, and that did wonders for the marketing for the watch in those first few days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think it was actually a marketing exercise. You know, to try to get celebrities to show it off. To get, you know, coverage for it. But, you know, that might be a bit of a stretch as well, because they were trying to sell this. Anyway, yeah, I thought it was like, the thing I like about Apple was that famous Warhol quote, you know, which is when he was talking about Coca-Cola. And he said, you know, that what was great about American capitalism and about American society was that, you know, everyone drank the same can of Coke. The president drank the same can of Coke that the bum on the corner was drinking. You know, everyone drank the same thing. And that's what Apple was always like, you know, even though, you know, it was everyone used the same iPhone, everyone used the same MacBook, everyone used the same iPod. And the watch was the first deviation from that. You know, here's a watch for the 1%, the gold one, and here's the aluminum one for everyone else. And that rubbed me the wrong way.
It just never made any sense to me. It never made any sense to me. I understand it's a fashion item, but it's still a computer, and computers are not like mechanical watches. They don't hold their value over time, right? Or become even more valuable. And so you're paying $10,000 for essentially the same technology that someone else is paying $300 for. with exception of the band and the case. It's the exact same product.
Right.
And so that, to me, it just never made any sense. I was like...
Well, that is the point, really, though, isn't it? That's why it's... did you hear that thing, that phrase, the Veblengood? It's named after an economist who said that, something that's made out of gold, it's only... Well, that's probably not a good example, but, you know, some goods are only... people buy them because they are so high priced
because they're exclusive,
right? And it shows off your status. And so I think for a lot of people that does make sense. It's like it's saying, you know, they don't care. In fact, that's the whole point, that it's throwaway, right?
just to show people, yeah, that
you can afford to buy a watch, you know, that costs that much money, and you're going to be getting a new one next year.
So there's some sultans that probably have the gold edition.
Oh yeah, sure.
But I don't. They stopped carrying that, right? The new edition is a ceramic watch,
right?
With a sport strap, I think. It still costs $1,000. Although, right, that ceramic watch looks pretty baller. I would love to have one of those.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's no way I'm spending $1,000 on a watch that I could get for $250. All right, Buster, what do you got?
Yep. Well, I guess I would say the Pippin, the one time Apple forged into the video gaming arena.
That's what I was gonna pick, dude. You stole my pick. It? Yeah, that's right. We could talk about it together.
Well, it didn't. You probably know more about it than me. It just was a big flop, though. But when people are like, floppage. Why doesn't Apple get into why doesn't Apple make the Apple TV like a legit gaming console? I think you just look at the Pippin, and that's exactly why.
The Pippin was an odd animal, wasn't it? So the Apple Pippin was a Apple design console, and it was also meant to be a computer client, so you were supposed to be able to do like internet stuff and that type of thing, like just like light computational stuff on it. Although from what I was able to find out about it, it was actually never a product that Apple wanted to sell themselves. They designed the platform, and they wanted other companies to actually create the consoles and sell it and license it from Apple, and that was kind of the plan. And Bandai was one of the first companies to start producing the console. But it was totally an odd duck. I mean, it came out in 1996. It was produced between 96 and 97. And at that time, you know, PlayStation was popular. And I don't know how much PlayStation cost at that time. I would guess $300. And the Pippin was $600 for a gaming console, dude. I mean, that is outrageously expensive. That would be like if Xbox released a $900 console or something. I don't know why they priced it so high or why they thought people would buy a console that was that expensive. I do like that they called the game controller the Apple Jack, and it was like this boomerang looking thing, super futuristic looking.
It doesn't look like it felt good in the hand. I don't know.
It doesn't look like it felt good in the hand at all. It looked like a croissant, actually. it looked exactly like a croissant. And if you have sweaty hands when you play games like I do, you know, it looks like it might like push out of your hands. It definitely didn't look comfortable. In any case, totally bizarre product, totally bizarre. And it makes you think, like, why did Apple ever think this was a good idea to release something like this at the time, especially when you had, you know, the Xbox and the PlayStation out there and they were dominating, and Nintendo, mm-hmm. they were dominating the market. And then here comes Apple with a $600 gaming console that never had more than 13 games made for it. Do you know anything? Can you add anything to the conversation about the Pippin?
Yeah, it was, you know, pre-Steve Jobs, and I don't know that much about the platform either. I mean, it was, I think it was, you know, they had Microsoft Envy, right? They were trying to license the platform out.
Yeah.
They didn't want to license out the Mac. Or were they doing Mac licensing at that time, the clone licensing?
I don't recall. It could have been. It was in the mid-90s, so maybe they hadn't moved away from that yet.
Yeah, so they might have... it was either just before that or congruent to it. And so, you know, I'm sure that that's what they were hoping. It was like, you know, trying to beat Microsoft their own game, trying to get, you know, they'd do this Microsoft model, wouldn't they? The reason it was expensive is because there was only one console. But, you know, presumably they were hoping that the hardware manufacturers would compete against each other and drive the prices down. And so the console prices would be cheap and they would take care of the platform, the software platform.
Buster, I thought you were going to go with maybe you're going to do this for your next pick, the socks. The iPod socks.
Socks, yeah.
Dude, you know, you're going to make fun of those socks. I love those things. I remember when I got my first iPod, it was like a $400 purchase, and it was gorgeous, a beautiful piece of industrial design, and of course you wanted to protect it. So I went out and I bought like one of those like sock packs, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was like all the different colored iPod socks that you could put on there. And but they were annoying because they made your iPod even thicker. And then when you actually wanted to, like, you know, like scroll, like to change the volume or the tracks or anything, you had to take it out of your pocket. The sock would come off, you know, or you had to take it out, pull the sock off, and then control it, and then put the sock back on and put it back in your product or on your iPod. So it wasn't convenient at all. It was actually kind of annoying to use.
Made it look good, though.
They were super handy, yeah. They were super handy. I heard the Red Hot Chili Peppers liked them, too. They repurposed their use, of course.
Do they get all stinky, though? Do they smell of cheese?
You'd have to ask Anthony Kiedis about that. I have a feeling you wouldn't want to take a sniff of fleas, that's for sure. Not after one of their concerts, especially. I still actually have some of my iPod socks. I think they're in my... I have like this old bin of like technology that you just kind of have like laying around, you know, like in case you need like an Ethernet cable or something. And I bet you I still got a couple iPod socks in there. In fact, next time we see each other, we should do a straight up Red Hot Chili Peppers with the iPod socks, take a photo. What do you guys think about that? We can make it our new album art. give it away. Huh? Nobody? All right. Leander, what's your next pick?
Next one, the Apple TV remote, I guess, the latest Apple TV.
What? You remote. Think it's that bad?
Well, I've got the same problem that everyone else does, which is I'm always trying to use it upside down. You hit the wrong button.
Yeah.
You pick it up upside down. You can't tell which way it's oriented. Although, actually, I just found you can. I just bought a strap. You can get a strap with a lightning adapter on the end of it and plug it into the lightning port. So that tells you which way around it's supposed to go.
Is it really that much of a problem for you that it necessitates buying an accessory to help you know which way you're
pointing it? Well, I've seen people write, you know, they've wrapped them with elastic bands or those asparagus bands or tape. People have done all kinds of crazy stuff to try to, you know, like to show them which way around it goes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I always get that. And it's kind of too small and too fiddly. It's, you know, I know that Apple loves to go for small and light, but it is too small. It is too light.
I find the button layout to be confusing, too.
Right.
I don't understand, like, the button controls oftentimes. I get it now. It's more intuitive for me now. But, like, when I first got it especially, I didn't understand how the buttons were supposed to be used.
Yeah, right. That's true, too.
I mean, using, like, the menu button to go back, you know?
Yeah, right.
And then you're pressing the screen button, which I'm still not entirely sure what second functionality that has, if any, because I know it takes you back just to the main or to the main screen. But I wonder if there's some second function that button has. See, I don't know. And I've been using this thing for a year and a half now.
Right. In its defense, the Siri on it works really well.
Probably, oddly enough, probably one of the best Siri experiences I've had on any Apple device.
Right, yeah, it does work great.
It works that well.
It's great for doing things like passwords, you know, putting your passwords in. Just to do that the other day, and I dictated it, and it was great. Worked flawlessly.
That is a good experience, yeah. Certainly better than when I first, you know, got the Apple TV, and you had to sit there and, you know, do like what you have to do for Netflix, where you have to go through and pick one letter at a time. Oh, my gosh, terrible. Do you have any older products on there, Leander? You know, from
I was gonna say the original Mac, and I know this is heresy, and I know people are gonna, you know, I'm gonna get hate for this, but the original Mac, you know, wasn't a stunning success, and in fact, you know, like it was only saved by Adobe coming out and with the early page layout program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, it wasn't Adobe, it's Aldus PageMaker. And the laser writer. So it only took off. The only reason it survives today was because of the whole desktop publishing revolution. But that was like about, I think, more than a year, maybe even 18 months after the Mac came out. You know, it really struggled. It made a big splash and everyone sort of admired it. And in fact, Douglas Adams, you know, had a beautiful quote about it, which is like, people fell in love with the idea of the Mac and not the actual Mac itself. Because it was so underpowered.
I had never heard that. So you think that people just liked the way that it looked and like the promise that it had, but not the actual machine itself?
Well, because the interface was, you know, the GUI, the GUI was like was amazing. It was astounding. I had access. My dad worked had one of the first Macs in the UK, so we were you know, we were able to play with this, and me and my brothers used to spend all evening, you know, like and weekends, you know, hours and hours using Mac Paint, drawing these pictures and then printing them out on this giant dot matrix printer that made the whole building shake.
Like the Apple LaserWriter?
Yeah.
I used to have one of those. Yeah.
No, it was dot matrix, so it was even worse than that. The LaserWriter was, you know, uses laser technology,
oh,
right? So it was much quieter.
Right. I had the dot matrix one. That's the one we had. It was like...
And this would shake the whole building. It was incredible. It was so noisy, and it's so like, you know, it would vibrate so much. But you know, then I remember writing term papers on it. I mean, how many times have you been writing a paper on the thing, and you remember you had to save it onto a little floppy disk?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the machine would crash, right? And you'd lose everything. And then if you wanted to save it, what you had to do is you had to pop out the Word disk. Word came on a little floppy disk. So while you were writing in it, you had to have the Word disk in. And if you wanted to save it, it would pop out the Word disk. You'd have to pop in your blank disk or whatever disk you were using to save your file, pop it out again, and then pop the Word disk back in to continue writing. Does you remember that? The whole thing was a nightmare.
We had an Apple II GS, so ours had the floppy drive and the hard disk drive. So you could be operating both at the same time. It was cutting edge technology.
Right. That didn't come until a couple of years later. Uh-huh. But and of course made all the difference. Yeah, I remember having a 40 megabyte hard drive, which at the time seemed
mind-blowing.
How am I gonna fill up 40 megabytes? Right. It was astonishing. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. You'd have a stack. All your files, all your programs were on stacks of floppy disks everywhere, and they all had little handwritten labels, and you know, they would sometimes go, you know, like it would catch when you put it or ejected it or put it into the machine, and so they would be, you know, they were useless. The sliding mechanism, you know, would get all mangled up.
Leander's having like flashbacks now.
It's horrible.
The pain and agony of having to use one of these machines.
I remember losing loads of work because when the thing crashed, you know, it'd freeze up and you couldn't believe it. It would always be like, just as you're about to finish this, some term paper, and the thing would crash and you'd lose it all. And there was no going back because it was all held in RAM.
Right.
You know, like
it's gone forever.
It was a horrible nightmare.
I was going to mention, you mentioned the original Mac, and since you were talking about it, I at least wanted to bring up, as I was doing my research for this, I ran across this story about a man who helped design some of the original prototypes that turned into the Mac. His name was Hartmut Esslinger, and he was an industrial designer. He used to work with Sony, and he ended up working with Apple. And check this out. The year is 1982. Apple is in its sixth year of existence. Steve Jobs, he's Apple's co-founder and chairman. He's 28 years old. He's been there for 6 years already. 6 years, and he already has like this multi-million dollar company at age 28. I can't even imagine. At that time, and this might explain why the company was struggling, their CEO was named Michael Scott.
That's what she said.
You guys ever pieced that together? They were doing bad. The CEO's name is Michael Scott. That might have had something to do with it. And he had created different business divisions for each product line, including accessories like monitors and memory drives. And each division had its own head of design, and they developed products in the way they wanted to develop products. And so it was much like, you know, like the Microsoft ecosystem, where all these different companies are out there creating all these different products, and they don't really have much communication with each other, if any at all. And they're just kind of doing their own thing. Well, that's how Apple was operating. And Steve Jobs, he realized that Michael Scott was driving the company into the ground, and he was like, we can't continue doing this. We have to unify the company and unify the design language of all these different products. And so he brought in Hartmut Esslinger. I just love saying that name. But Hartmut created all these beautiful prototypes, and I'll actually link to this article I found online that shows pictures of a lot of these products. And these things are like, it's funny, like I mentioned earlier, they are artifacts of their time. Like they look like they were created in the, you know, in the 80s, but they're very futuristic. Like they're future versions of 80s products, and they're gorgeous. And these designs that he had created eventually ended up becoming, I think, the Apple IIc that preceded the Macintosh, didn't it, Leander? The Apple IIc? I hate to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I'm not, well, like, you know, that's exact timeline.
Okay.
I can't remember. But
I think it was the Apple IIc, which then also led to the Macintosh. And you can see from his design language that he
created. Well, he didn't actually use, Esslinger didn't actually design the Mac.
No, he didn't design the Mac, but he designed the prototypes that led up to the unified design language that led to the Mac, was my understanding of it. You're good friends with him. You said he was at your book launch party, wasn't he? So
yeah. Yeah, he came along.
Okay. So what did I get that wrong?
Well, I'm not sure. I think it was afterwards, because it was like, you know, Jobs had a couple of in-house design. A couple of freelance designers, Jerry Manick and Terry Oyama, designed the Mac casing. And he saw that, you know, this is when he started to get into a design with the Apple II. And they had a competition to try and find a world-class designer. Mm-hmm. And it was called Snow White, because they wanted to get designs for different machines that were codenamed after the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Esslinger was the one that won the competition, and he was designing all this stuff in parallel while the first Mac was coming out. But I'm not 100% sure what the exact timeline was. He might, like you said, he might have designed a couple of Apple IIs before. And then, you know, afterwards, you know, he was responsible for all the design of all the machines that came after the Mac, like that whole era of all the beige machines afterwards, based on the Snow White design language. But I can't remember the exact, precise timeline.
I'll link to this article. As I said, you could check out some of the Snow White prototypes that, that he created. There's one in particular. It's the Apple phone, and it's like this super cool looking analog phone with a handset that you can like hang up, right? But then it also has like a screen. It almost looks like it's like a phone / Newton, and it has like the original Apple Pencil that you can like draw on and like leave notes. It has like contacts and stuff built into it, and my gosh, these designs are gorgeous. This stuff is unbelievably beautiful, and you can see how these products that he prototyped, you know, led into all the design language that ended up, you know, being used by Apple, you know, from, 1984 to 1990. Really gorgeous stuff.
He just came out with a book with a bunch of his prototypes that looks really nice.
Oh, yeah. That actually might be why this article is here. That book came out a while ago, didn't it? Like,
yeah,
2012 or something.
I thought it was more recent than that, but it might have been.
Maybe he has another book. In any case, okay, I digress. Do we have any other products before we wrap up? Buster, do you have anything else?
Not really. We mentioned the hockey puck mouse. Worst thing ever.
I actually used one of those. My brother had one with one of his laptops. It was actually one of my first experiences with like the new era of Macintosh and Macintosh accessories. You know, besides from my childhood when we'd use these things like at home and in school and stuff. And I was like, dude, this thing is crazy. I couldn't believe it. I was like round. It was like translucent gray plastic. And no one else was making products like that on the market. But it was a little weird to hold.
Yeah, it was. It's horrible. And it was the worst kind of, you know, cramp, wouldn't it? Your hand would be like into this horrible deformed claw.
Oh, was it that bad?
It was an RSI nightmare. In fact, you know, more general point was like, has Apple ever done a good mouse? Have any of them been any good?
I think you can give that a resounding no. Although the trackpad, one of the best interface accessories ever made.
Right. I totally agree. The trackpad, amazing. Like completely, you know, I will never go back to another mouse ever again, ever. I hope I never touch another mouse as long as I live. But the Mighty Mouse, remember that one with the little tiny trackball on the top of it?
Yes,
we had
awful.
To fiddle, caress that thing. That was another one where, you know, you'd end up with a horrible cramp after a couple of hours of using it.
And the ones after that. You end up with some deformed claw of a hand.
Yeah. It was, you know, I just Lewis has got RSI problems, and I just, you know, made him buy the trackpad, and they've completely gone away. No problems at all.
I have a friend that uses one of those magic mice, and he actually likes it. And I'm like, dude, this thing's terrible. Really? I can't stand using that thing.
Yeah, madness.
I like a big mouse, though. I don't need it to look like it came from, you know, like the future.
He was using one of those Logitech ones, the big, with about 8 different wheels and buttons and different things on it.
Yeah.
And that thing was also giving me also awful problems. They're all really bad. It was a big, you know, it was amazing because it lasted so long, didn't it? But the trackpad's far superior.
Yeah, the trackpad on my MacBook Pro is one of the best interface devices I've ever used. Although I gotta say, I'm reviewing a Logitech Master Mouse, and is it the Master Mouse? I think it is, and it is an absolutely fantastic mouse. Amazing, probably one of the best, mice I've ever used, and it has like the design of it, like the ergonomics of it, are perfect for my hand. I love the button layouts. And it's just solid as a rock. You could probably beat someone in the face with that, and it would still work after that. I don't know why you'd want to do that. Maybe someone breaks in while you're working at your desk. You got to use it as a self-defense device. That's a weapon here. Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing to say. But yeah, it's burly. It's got a nice heft to it, I guess is my point. And it's super accurate at tracking, even on my... I have a white desk with a white surface, and a lot of mice just don't work on it because it's white. And... This mouse has no problem with it at all. All righty, well, I think we should probably go ahead and wrap it up there. I think we're a little long.
You want to hear about the 14 others I've got on my list?
No.
Well, actually, I do. Let's do one more. Let's do one more, Leander. What's the best one that you have on there that you haven't talked about yet?
Well, I know it's the best one, but I was going to mention, remember the iBook, the toilet seat iBook?
Yeah, I do.
The first iBook. Maybe it's a bit harsh to single that one out because it was pretty groundbreaking. It was the first wireless laptop, right? The first one to use AirPort, the Wi-Fi AirPort. So that was pretty groundbreaking. But it was huge. It was really heavy. The battery life was horrible. It looked like a toilet seat. It had a built-in handle.
I thought it looked ugly as hell.
Yeah, and it was impossible to get to like upgrade the thing. I think to get RAM into it, you had to like almost half dismantle the machine.
Yeah,
it was a total nightmare. But
that's easier than the MacBook Pros today.
Yeah. Right, that's exactly true. That's totally true.
It's so easy to forget about all the products that Apple released in the last 30 years that were really hideous.
Yeah, well, talking of hideous was like, do you remember the around the iMac era, the first, they were called studio displays. They were the standalone CRT monitors, and they were sort of styled like that first Bondi Blue iMac with that see-through transparent plastic. Uh-huh. And there were a couple of those that are so ugly. They're huge. They're really, really hideously ugly looking. And it's kind of shocking because they look so dated now. And you go, oh, my God, how did Johnny Ive think that was, like a nice design at the time?
It's like when you had a really cool outfit that you loved like 20 years ago and a cool hairstyle that you thought was so cool. And you're like, all the ladies are going to totally love me. And then you see yourself in a picture from 20 years ago and you're like, I cannot believe I went out in public looking like that.
Yeah,
you got like this big long mullet. You got the MC Hammer pants on and one of like those half shirts that shows your navel. I just described you 20 years ago, didn't I?
No, that wasn't me. That was you.
I did have a mullet 20 years ago. I'll fully admit that. All right, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come tell us which Apple products you think we missed, is there one that we missed? Come let us know. We're on Twitter. I'm at Aerofon and Busters BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. We'll see you next time.
Next time. Oh, yeah.
That was a perfect embellishment.
Right.
We'll see you then. My cold is back, so I'm fighting that back off. So if I sound like a trucker, if I sound like a sexy trucker, okay. That's why.
I had a cold too. I had after I had the flu, then I had a cold this last week, and then the last 2 days I've had like conjunctivitis.
What is that? Is that like a sinus infection?
Pink eye.
Oh no! I had that for like a week, and it took at least a week and a half to get rid of.
Oh, really? Well, mine's gone today, so 2 days, but...
Did you have to use the drops?
Well, I tried to, but I was so squeamish that Tracy couldn't get him in my eye. I was like squealing like a baby, and then kicking my legs, and I kept on moving at the last minute, so it went along
my
face.
So the drop just hit your nose.
The bed was soaked because it all went on the bed instead of in my eyes.
I heard that another name for conjunctivitis is poop eye, because it means that you probably got some poop in your eyes. So I kind of wonder what's going on in your household that you contracted that.
We're recreating the Trump tapes.
That's a good one, actually.